an incredible transcendent live performance. She just said, is it true? Is it true? Tell me now. It's a promise I can make. And I won't. Tame Impala. Class Bell. March 10th. I don't know. I don't care. Get tickets now at evinco.ca.
Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Into your elbow.
You know the tune. If you're celebrating with your loved ones this holiday season, make sure to keep following the sanitary measures. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live.
Okay, it's recording.
And welcome to Labor Radio. It is Thursday, December the 16th. 2021, and it is our last episode for the year 2021, and it is seemingly looking like it's going to be a lot. 2022 is going to look a lot like 2021. This is your co-host, Mustafa Henaway, always with...
I'm Stéphane Doucet. Thanks for choosing to be with us again this month. This month, we're going to do a little... look back, recap on 2021, and maybe a little bit of predictions for 2022. As Mustafa said, might look fairly similar. But before we get to that, just want to let you know you can always find us on Facebook. Look up Labor Radio. We're also on the Labor Radio Podcast Network, where you can find lots of other shows that... are of concern to people interested in labor. You can also download episodes on CKUT's website, where you can, if you miss a show, come find us again.
And so, I mean, obviously looking back into the last year, 2021, it's definitely, I think the question of labor, the question of class, of unions has really come back, you know, as a result of the pandemic. And I think the pandemic not ending and a lot of the angers workers had against their employers have really spilled into a renewed sense into a need of labor organizing. And also the idea that of struggle that employers actually have no interest in keeping benefit, you know, and actually protecting workers' basic health and safety or their livelihoods. So to me, 2021, while it wasn't definitely not maybe an outbreak in terms of, a general strike, or it's definitely been an upswing of labor struggle, especially here in Quebec, both in the public and actually in the private sector, when, you know, usually things become dominated in the public sector. What we're beginning to actually see is things actually move in the private sector.
Yeah, so maybe to talk about a few different elements of the private sector that are really happening right now. The hotel sectoral bargaining is going strong. I think that about 15 hotels have signed agreements now, but some are going on their third month of strike as we speak. So obviously that's a difficult industry right now, what with the travel restrictions and the pandemic and so on, but the workers there are not backing down and they're still winning some significant victories in terms of their contracts, which shows that they're not willing to pay for the crisis. Very encouraging stuff. Otherwise, some of the really important private sector negotiations and struggles. There was a bunch of slaughterhouse workers. The most significant probably are Olimel in Vallée-Jonction with the CSN, Excelsior in Saint-Anselme with the UFCW or TUAC, and also Viande Breton, which was less in the news but won some really interesting gains in their contract as well. These are all like sort of big workplaces, which gave themselves, in the case of Onimel and Excelsior, had very long strikes where they were sort of the government was talking about sending them back to work, and the employers were trying to play a media game, talking about the backlog of animals that have to be slaughtered and so on. They didn't back down and they won some significant victories. I won't say that they won everything that they wanted. I think, for example, Animal's contract was only ratified with just under 80%, which is not anywhere near unanimous, but that said, these are like some of the, I mean, in terms of, as you were saying, Mustafa, like the private sector is not very combative in this moment in the West, to say the least, but some industries can't really leave the country and be offshored, and meat processing is one of them. So that's one of the places where you're going to see a lot of workers still in unions and still having fights over contracts. And maybe one last one I'll mention in terms of private sector in Quebec is the construction workers. That they voted for a general strike and then at the last second they signed an agreement. This is not a surprise either, in the sense that the construction unions are not known to be very combative, and in this case they sort of proved that to be true. It's like a nice thing to think that they can vote for a mandate, a general strike mandate, but it takes a whole nother type of energy to actually put it into place.
I mean, going beyond Quebec, you know, in the private sector, I mean, we didn't see maybe an intensified set of strikes, but finally some breakthroughs in actually organizing, actually in the private sector, right, where you have extremely low union density, sort of this kind of malaise, you know, across Toronto and in Montreal, and in fact in Alberta. UFCW was actually able, in kind of in a very short span of time, organize multiple, nearly half a dozen Indigo chapters workplaces, and a lot of that issues came down to basic respect, staffing issues in terms of not willing to put in the resources to extra staff during COVID. You know, and the owners of Chapters Indigo, these are still the richest, one of the richest families in all of Canada, Reisman and Schwartz. So it was actually an incredible success. I mean, even despite some of the drawbacks, the fact that, you know, you had multiple Chapters Indigo, you know, where a lot of these sites are part-time workers, young workers, and a lot of unions have dismissed as being really hard to organize, where you actually had some sense of organization, right? In these small shops where things are beginning to happen. It's like CSN and Element Merci, right? That was also, that actually had a strike this year as well. So you're beginning to see this move into the private sector. I mean, not to promote what's happening in the South and of us, but, you know, in the Starbucks too, we're beginning to actually see three votes take place in different Starbucks. While it's not maybe going to bring down capitalism to its knees, it's still something. And also in Alberta, you know, the Teamsters United actually began a campaign. I mean, they had to drop the campaign for now, but to organize the Amazon fulfillment center outside of Edmonton, right? So, but they actually unfortunately had to stop that campaign because there was a lack of support, similar to what was happening in Bessemer and Alabama. But in terms of the private sector, I think things are moving in a direction that a lot of people thought that wouldn't happen, right?
Yeah, so hopefully these things accelerate. I mean, what's tough about the private sector right now is the size, I think, of the places that you're looking at unionizing, where you have some really small shops that amount to small gains and that are sort of resource intensive organizing campaigns, and then you're otherwise going up against extremely deep pocketed anti-union workplaces such as Amazon and Walmart and other larger employers, where the difficulty is of a different order. Maybe to talk about a few other difficult things that happened this year, particularly in Quebec, we'll start with, we covered it a bunch on the show, the public sector bargaining, which is not exactly over yet, but for the most part is finished, and we were dismayed that there was no common front. Which, of course, meant that the results were lesser. And this sort of played into the hands of the government's strategy anyways, which is to fracture bargaining even within local units. So to play workers against each other and to try to smash the power of the unions. So this unfortunately played out in a predictable way, in a sense. I can't say that there's any significant victories coming out of the public sector negotiations this time around, but hopefully the lesson is learned, and next time around we won't have the nurses going their own way and the teachers going their own way, but instead have everyone negotiate together and everyone fight together. Otherwise, there was also the striking port workers in Montreal who were ordered back to work by the federal government. That was a QP union. They hold tremendous amount of economic power, and accordingly, when they use that power, the even more tremendous power of the federal government and the entire capitalist class told them they weren't allowed to use that power.
No, I mean, back to the common front, right? And then there was some initiatives by the teachers, by progressive teachers, which we've interviewed, you know, Marion from the network of progressive education workers, and attempts to build something from below, but that lack of a common front, and you know, it really played into Legault's hand, and now we're gonna see those consequences later down the road. And I mean, also the fact that, you know, when you see it, that having some strategy to escalate things, it's clear that in the public sector that the power was in the hands of the workers, but you know, you're already seeing things in the healthcare sector where there's already breakdown already. While préposés have won certain contracts, you're beginning to see this segmentation of like of the public sector beginning to use more and more, you know, temporary foreign workers, agency workers in the public health sector to get around even some of those gains, and especially with proposés and a lot of the decrees that were issued. So I think we're, you know, unlike the daycare workers and the garderie workers, you know, and early childhood education workers, where I know we can discuss it now, it's where the, not that there was a complete front commune, but in the sense where there was some deliberate strategy of escalation and of mobilization that I think really forced the hand of the provincial government.
Yeah, and so if you're listening to this live, then you can come to the Greek Workers Association, where there's an event with some members of CSN and CSQ to have a sort of have a look at that struggle. But it's true that they, while the contract was ratified, I think in the CSN at least, which was representing the majority of workers in the CPEs, I think it was ratified at 93%. So that's fairly good. But I know, I mean, I've spoken to some daycare workers who are not that satisfied with the agreement. So I think there's some gains, but I think one of the lessons was that they really saw the way that Ngo negotiates, and they really worked hard, I think, to counter the messaging. And we talked about this in our interview with Jeff Begley 2 months ago. But the way that he was trying to play the educators against the support staff and auxiliary staff, the cooks and cleaners and so on, I won't say that it was completely defeated, because they didn't get the same raises as the educators did, but I think that the union did try to counter that kind of messaging.
Clearly, one of the ways that, you know, the Quebec government and Legault's style of negotiating or not negotiating has been, you know, what we saw is, you know, with the health and safety reforms, right? So Projet de loi 59, which was the first major reform to occupational health and safety, and it was really a disaster for workers and really a large step backwards, right? And so I think one of the things that they presented as their carrot was this idea that there would be mandatory health and safety committees in all workplaces, right? That beyond in all sectors of workplaces above 20 people, that would make the prevention side of health and safety better, but then at the same time gutting actually the side where people are awarded occupational health and safety benefits, the CSST complaint process, what's considered a health and safety complaint. So at the same time, it was really a step backwards. And finally, it took some time, but all the union federations rejected in the entirety of the health and safety law. And the government was about to go backwards, but the problem was the mobilization on the ground was actually limited to actually force it into anywhere. And I think the government, once they realized that, they disregarded a lot of what was being put forward by the unions and by groups like UTAM, La Union de Travailleurs Accidentés de Montréal, and the Immigrant Workers Center. So they rejected a lot of the proposals put forth from labor, because they knew there just wasn't the kind of resistance that was actually going to make them go backwards on it. So it was clear that Legault was pushing this pro-business reform, while at the same time giving this what seems to be like a carrot on the surface, but really isn't at all, because a lot of these things could just be usurped by employers in general. So even though there's time before it's implemented, but it's really going to be a step backwards, because it'll be really harder for workers to actually to get their health and safety insurance, right? Because they'll have to go to to, you know, CSST appointed doctors and employer appointed doctors. So there's no, it really puts the onus on workers to prove things which are obvious, right? And things that, yeah. So it's a large step backwards.
It is, and it's a huge shame that we weren't able to stop that from happening. But I guess this was clearly a priority of Legault's. He's been a bit more malleable on other issues. I mean, the thing is that he has a majority government and has a huge majority in terms of the polls, support from the public. So he's picking his battles, and I think that he chose that one wisely, because that's going to save billions of dollars from the pockets of companies, and that's going to be offloaded onto workers in many different forms, both in terms of lost benefits when they won't be able to access CSST, and also in terms of just losing their jobs when they get injured, and so on and so on. It's a disaster for workers. Two centenaries this year, 2021. There's the CSN centenary, which it's been widely covered in the press. There's some nice documentaries and books that were published. Also the centenary of the Communist Party of Canada, who's sort of, you can nicely pair it with the centenary of the CSN. It's sort of, it gives you an idea of like the growth of the workers' movement in Canada. You're going to see a lot of centenaries in this sort of decade that mark the beginning of organized working class activity in this country. Otherwise, I guess one thing that we didn't mention was the co-op refinery strike. And this one's interesting to me because, I mean, a lot of people who listen to our show maybe aren't Quebecers. It's a mostly English show. but one thing about Quebec is that we have anti-scab legislation. And one thing that Saskatchewan doesn't have is anti-scab legislation. And so this conflict in Saskatchewan at the co-op refinery in Regina, where scabs were being flown in helicopters over the picket lines, where the cops were assaulting the picket lines. Very, very tedious conflict. And it started in 2020 and then just wrapped up this year. A lot of people took note of it because of the way that it was affecting workers in the oil industry, who are sort of like the darlings of the conservative and right-wing governments when they try to justify the maintenance of the oil industry. And this sort of went to show the hypocrisy involved in that kind of talking. So anyway, that was sort of held up as significant in that way. But I also think it shows us here in Quebec sort of what anti-scab legislation does, because we have had scabs in Quebec, and, you know, legislation doesn't stop the companies from breaking the law. There was scabs at the hotels, there was scabs at the Jean Coutu warehouse. So anyways, but it's just gives a conflict a totally different mood when you're having to try to prevent scabs from entering your workplace in ways that aren't trying to use the law against them, but more like physically.
Do other Quebec strikes that were worth mentioning too, right? And just to give a sense of the mood of what 2021 was like, was that, you know, you had the STL, the public transit of Laval, voting to go on strike, and also the SAQ warehouse, also a QP affiliated, also going on strike over conditions and pay. So there was, I think, a general mood that, you know, people were beginning to go on the offensive in Quebec. So just to give a number of an idea of what it was, you know, there was 87 work stoppages in 2021, right? And you know, that's far significant. Obviously, the first year of the pandemic, there was only 23. But even in 2019, there was, you know, only around a 30, right? This is far from the peak of the periods of the Common Front where you, but it actually shows a significant upswing in the level of workers' activity in Quebec, which is, you know, sort of for different reasons, but at pace with what's happening in other places, you know, such as the United States. You know, I think it's, well, we don't cover it a bit because obviously we're focused here on what's happening in Canada. But, you know, one of the things that worth mentioning and that's on the lips of a lot of people in the U.S. is sort of the, I mean, it's also is a high is Striketober, right? So significant strikes at Kellogg's in the U.S. Unfortunately, Kellogg's after the vote, after the ratification of the agreement, Kellogg signaled that they're going to fire everyone who was involved in the strike openly. A very classic move for the United States. You had the strike at John Deere in the U.S. as well. You know, you've had also now you have the Amazon organizing campaigns in the United States. So the Amazon Labor Union out on the East Coast going for ratification. Also, Bessemer will in Alabama, the facility there will get a second vote, which was organized by the retail and distribution, just the RDSW. And so that's also a significant, you know, upside of things too. And you also have healthcare strikes out on the West Coast in the U.S. So it's clear that there's kind of a movement for workers trying to get compensated for what's due during the pandemic. In New York,
It wasn't a formal strike, but taxi workers went on a significant hunger strike where taxi drivers almost had died, you know, because they weren't receiving any relief packages, and many of them were heavily indebted before the pandemic as a result of the gig economy, as a result of Uber, not just because of the lockdowns. So you see this kind of, I think this trend's not going to go anywhere in 2022.
Right. And maybe just one final note for 2021 before we talk about next year is the farmers' strike in India. We covered it last year around this time, maybe a couple months ago, October, November in 2020 was when we talked to one of the comrades from the Center of Indian Trade Unions. But that struggle lasted over a year and eventually was able to win the repeal of the three farm laws that they were sort of set into motion by. But there's a lot to say about that, and mainly that one of the biggest protest movements in the history of the world was victorious, and that, I mean, I don't know. What do you say to that? Fairly significant event, if I can say that about it.
Oh.
But so what are you looking for next year, Mustafa? What's 2022 looking like?
I mean, I think 2022, I mean, it's going to be, you know, like if you take a bird's eye view, I mean, it's pretty, we live in a unique time, right? Where lots of things that didn't matter are going to matter again, right? Like they thought they had, you know, neoliberalism was functioning, and now it's just totally crumbling in front of their feet, right? They can't deal with inflation anymore. And the inflation's not as a result of unions demanding, you know, higher wages. So workers are obviously going to start demanding higher wages because it's, you know, it's not their fault. I think that's going to scare the living kajibles out of the capitalist class because, you know, what happened in the 70s was, you know, we had to enforce price controls because of the unions, right? So much of the, you know, what they were doing to stop inflation, especially in Canada, right? You had the Great Strike of 74 and or 76. And, you know, because a lot of it was because of union militancy. But now, you know, inflation has nothing to do with labor militancy. So they're gouging the prices, but workers aren't even taking the share of that. Of those price increases. So I think they're obviously scared that workers are going to start asking for their fair share. And I mean, I think the other thing too that like will be interesting to see is not just the inflation question and how that gets dealt with, but also this idea of, you know, the great resignation, where lots of people, it's not so much in Canada. Actually, they statistically realize that lots of people have gone back to their jobs in like the US where people are just leaving their, you know, their BS jobs. But I think the idea that things will remain kind of just the same, especially now that CERB has ended as well, I think is going to make things, you know, in terms of, you know, the conditions. I mean, I think they're ripe, and it's just, it's a question of what unions are willing to do, or, you know, are union at least labor activists, you know, maybe outside of the bureaucracies, are really going to try to push for. You know, there's this renewed momentum around, you know, the minimum wage campaign, people maybe trying to think about and trying to expand, you know, the call around fighting for regularization around precarious workers. And And so whether these things, you know, can get bigger, and sort of maybe what we've seen in New Brunswick, you know, as an example, we didn't talk about it yet. You know, is that going to happen in other provinces? You know, what we didn't actually see in Quebec, but really kind of a militant sort of cross public sector sort of strike. Because eventually, I mean, the other thing outside of inflation is that once the austerity bill, you know, once the bill for the pandemic comes in, you know, the other shoe, which is austerity, is going to drop, I think, next year, you know? So, I mean, it's a question what we're going to do, but I'm pretty excited for next year, despite all of that despair. I think those things, you know, coupled with the already ongoing organizing, it just means, you know, are people going to join initiatives and unions and, you know, are we actually going to start reaching workers to actually to get involved? That's the big question, you know?
Yeah, those are extremely valuable insights. I think one of the things about austerity is that Trudeau didn't get his majority government, so is less likely to ram it through at the federal level. Although you can't exactly count on the NDP to go against austerity. That's an understatement. Similarly, in Quebec, we'll have a provincial election next October, I believe, where I think going on to a second mandate, if Legault gets it, which it looks likely that he will, he might use that as his ticket to really turn the screw. Now, I think it's important for the working people's movements to not only take a look at what we can do to combat austerity just as a sort of isolated issue, but also to look at the general conditions of capital in the world. And one of the things that's happening that workers need to really watch out for is the danger of war, because during periods of capitalist crisis, the danger of war tends to increase a lot. And that's sort of what led to the two world wars. And it's often a way for capitalists to unload, if you will. And we see that sort of danger of war coming up through the new Cold War with China. And Canada is not outside of that. We were talking about buying $1 trillion worth of fighter jets. These are things that the workers' movement needs to address, because if we want money for social programs and for wages, we got to take that out of the war budget. And similarly with climate change, we can't have a struggle against climate change while maintaining and vastly increasing the budget for war, which is never an idle threat. I mean, right now, the threat of war is not just a threat in Yemen or in Syria. So these are the things I think that the workers' movement needs to have a clear position on. And I would say that in Canada, it hasn't had a very clear position for a while. It might seem a little bit far away from the bread and butter issues that we've been told for a long time are the only things that workers care about. But I don't believe that to be true. And I mean, I don't know. I would be pretty sad about a workers' movement that didn't care about peace. So those are some of the things that are at the front of my brain.
No, I mean, and it's not far off from bread and butter issues, right? Like, if you look at the question of China, it's like what they don't want from China, right? Like, they don't want China to develop, right? Because they just want it to be the sweatshop of the world, right? And if you're the sweatshop of the world, then they can keep wages down here. They can, you know, because they'll be able to have an ample supply of really low cost goods, right? And that's not going to happen anymore. So for them, the idea of China developing, it's not that they're ever equal partners, but it's the fact that China wants to develop on its own terms, you know, and that all of a sudden becomes the largest strategic threat, you know, to democratic West. It's the most anti-democratic form that people no longer have the right to develop. And if they do so, they bear the, you know, the brunt, right? So it's clearly is a working issue, and it's a bread and butter issue, right? That if people actually were paid adequately, if profits actually went to working people and those gains, and and to allow, you know, countries to actually develop on their own terms, that kind of like ideas of equal exchange or a more equal world would not be threatening to anyone. We wouldn't live in this constant threat of war. But this constant threat of war is really ensuring that our corporate elite maintain, you know, in full, you know, in control of a world system, a world economic system, you know. So I think the China question is very much a bread and butter issue.
Well, damn. So I guess those are some thoughts for 2022. Here at the show, we're looking at some exciting developments. We're hopefully going to have some great guests for 2022. As the workers' movement inevitably develops and gains in militancy, we'll have even more exciting interviews for you. And we hope to contribute to that movement in this small way of, you know, sort of showcasing some of the people on the inside who don't really get to do these long-form interviews on the radio. who if they're ever heard are bookended by the voices of the capitalist class to make sure that you don't get the wrong idea. But yeah, those are some of the things we're looking forward to.
And I think one thing that will get us off to 2022 and a great start is that we'll be having writer, author, director of the Tricontinental Institute, Vijay Prashad, who I'm sure many of our listeners know or heard of, to talk about kind of labor struggles in the Global South more, and, you know, the Third World, and you know, something that we don't get to talk about enough on our show because we're here. So that's going to be, I think, an exciting thing. And I think the other thing that we'll be able to look forward to is maybe some interesting stuff. We'll see what Teamsters does with Amazon, and they're going to launch their campaign in March as well. So that could be an interesting battle, or, you know, hopefully it doesn't go down the route of what we saw in Alabama.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It is Amazon. Everyone should read Mustafa's piece about Amazon. It's now translated in French also. So you can, yeah, just Google Mustafa Hanaway Amazon. Read about his experience at the Amazon workhouse in her workhouse. That's a Freudian slip right there. Warehouse in Laval. Bring it on. Should we do like an outro? Or should we add more to the
portion? No, I think we just do an outro.
Yeah. I'd say we probably had like 4 minutes
of randomness.
Then we're at like 38 minutes ish.
So, I mean, that was almost an outro. So we just gotta like add.
Yeah, sure.
Have a safe holidays. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah.
Don't get COVID.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you've been listening to our wrap up for 2021 and what we predict for 2022. Want to wish all our listeners really a safe and happy holidays, and stay tuned really for 2022, and stay safe, and if you can, and yeah, the struggle continues. Yeah, so you can always check us out on CQT 90.3 FM, on Facebook, Labor Radio, as well as downloading our episodes on the CKUT archive. This is, you know, goodbye for me, Mustafa, and
me, Stefan. So thanks for listening, and Happy New Year.
sounds, tune into CKUT 90.3 on the Frequency Modulation Band Radio. www.ckut.ca on the internet. Streaming audio, archive shows, and information.
CKUT.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
I'm Martin Carly, and I like to popularize science. Vaccination against COVID-19 for children aged 5 to 11 has begun. As parents, you may be asking if the vaccine is safe and effective. The answer is yes. The vaccine is approved by Health Canada and has been the subject of numerous studies involving thousands of people, including children. Experts also closely monitor any adverse effects that may occur after vaccination.
For more information, visit quebec.ca/youthvaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Silence, it's me, so cross my lips. I still. Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Chautauqua, Munayang, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, December 16th, 2021. On tonight's show, a remix of sorts, reviewing past conversations for excellent shows coming up this weekend. My guests, director Ellen David on four Anglos surviving the COVID apocalypse.
It's quick and dirty. Our headline, our poster said, you've masked, you've vaxxed, now it's time to laugh. That's kind of our motto.
And I'll include some music from Bowser and Blue, who will be on stage at this show this weekend. As well, the Siegel Center goes to the dogs with Super Dogs the Musical, director Sarah Rodriguez.
Coming back from this interminable intermission, being back in the room is so beautiful and so meaningful and so like, oh yes, this is home in many ways.
And animal trainer Danielle Pichette on her dogs start.